AM Amory and WBZH 910 AM W245 CT Hayward.
Always streaming on the Civic
ABC
Media
app. ABC News, I'm Andy Field. They've arrested a driver in Boulder where Deputy Chief Stephen Redfern says the man was trying to run over people in a city park.
We don't know his intentions other than the fact that he clearly came to this park for some reason or another. Some of the individuals that were in the park at the time we believe were unhoused, but we don't know if that was his specific intent or not. It's something we're still working on.
Police say 44-year-old Bruce Alvey is now in custody, charged with four counts of attempted first-degree murder. Striking United Auto Workers.
On our Facebook groups, our Instagrams, our local groups, we're saying, hey, does anybody need anything? I can drive up there. I'm only 5 minutes away. I'm only 10. Do you need a ride to the picket line? We can get you.
Tanya Sullivan, among the thousands of UAW members on strike against the Big Three. Bijou Phillips filing for divorce from her husband, Danny Masterson, days after that former That 70s Show star was sentenced to 30 years to life in prison for two rape convictions. This is ABC News. Temple University's acting president, Joanne Epps, has died after collapsing at a memorial service. Congress is hearing from FEMA's administrator about disaster readiness after the wildfires and hurricanes.
Transportation and Infrastructure Committee Chairman Sam Graves pointed to the recent disasters across the country, saying he hopes new congressional reforms can help remove red tape amid any recovery process. FEMA Administrator Deanne Criswell agreed, saying climate is exacerbating disasters across the nation.
Increase in the intensity, the severity, the length of recovery, the complexity of the types of severe weather events that we're responding to.
Criswell says she's looking forward to seeing if lawmakers can help streamline the process to do direct repairs to homes in the wake of disasters. M. Nguyen, ABC News.
Hyundai in a rush to open its electric vehicle and battery production complex in Georgia. The company wants to take advantage of the federal electric vehicle incentives that reward domestic production. Andy Field, ABC News.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly. Republican Speaker of the Wisconsin Assembly, Robin Voss, is blocking pay raises for University of Wisconsin employees unless the university cuts diversity, equity, and inclusion spending by $32 million. The Republican-controlled legislature voted to cut funding to the University of Wisconsin system, a number they identified as the funding for DEI efforts. The legislature had previously approved 4% raises for 34,000 university employees this year and 2% for next year. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is looking for the public's help in preventing the spread of chronic wasting disease in the deer population. Reports of chronic wasting disease have already been confirmed in the state, and the DNR is asking residents not to bait or feed deer this fall. Baiting and feeding is prohibited across the majority of Wisconsin counties, but it bears repeating as deer will congregate for food and the disease could spread. For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly.
Red Delicious, Honeycrisp, Granny Smith. If you have a favorite apple, now is the time to pick it straight from the source. Did you know Wisconsin has more than 300 apple orchards? Travel Wisconsin recently naming its favorites, including the Oneida National Apple Orchard outside Green Bay, Ferguson's Orchards in Eau Claire, and Apple Holler south of Racine. Many provide tons of family fun in the fall, too. Tire swings, lawn bowling, hay rides, and more. Apple experts suggest if you want to pick yours fresh, do it before the end of October. For Civic Media, I'm Terry.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
My immediate thought when I read about this and then watched it today was, please don't die, Senator McConnell. I couldn't disagree more strongly with Senator McConnell's policy positions, but he has been one of the only elected officials that's in a leadership position for the Republican Party that hasn't completely supplicated himself to Donald Trump.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Weeknights at 6 p.m.
on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Brock.
I didn't realize that Tucker Carlson's like hemorrhaging viewers. And I heard yesterday someone was like, oh yeah, like no one's actually watching it anymore. I was like, oh, yeah, that doesn't really surprise me. It's kind of like Threads.
it was a thing for about five minutes.
It was
like
a week. Everyone was excited and then they moved on.
Wow, it's like Scott Walker's presidential campaign. It's a big deal for about a week.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bry. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid.
Dude,
Did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
It's never personal, only politics. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show with Dom and Kroot.
Weekdays from 4 until 6
on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I go back to what Sean Fain, the president of the UAW, said in response to Donald Trump, talking about going to Detroit to walk the picket line. He said, look, every fiber of our union is being poured into fighting the billionaire class and an economy that enriches people like Donald Trump at the expense of workers. And again, this is the right frame. This is the up-down response in a world that keeps pushing us to red hat, blue hat. And he's spot on here. This is about a working class ensuring that they get to share in the wealth that their labor creates. So am I surprised that the UAW went on strike? No, I'm not surprised at all. And here to share some thoughts on what's going on and, you know, why, I've asked Charles Wade to come talk with us. Charles is a UAW member with Local 900 in Wayne, Michigan. Charles, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you.
So let's start with the big question. You know, why are you here?
I'm here just to kind of explain why we're on strike and why the membership is really just out there. We're fighting to get a little bit, raise the American standard of pay and stuff out here and rebuild the middle class. You know, we're trying to create an economy where it's fair for everyone rather than just for the billionaires and millionaires out there. You know, I mean, we're sick of eating dirt. You know, we want to at least eat a pot pie every once in a while, I guess.
Yeah, the phrase goes, I don't want to make a killing, I just want to make a living. And I look at the profits of the big three. What is it, something like $250 billion over the last decade, something like $23 billion in the first 6 months of this year. You've got CEOs making in the $20 million an hour or $20 million a year range. And yet I see starting wages at $16-17 an hour for a job that used to be the gold standard of the American working class. And I say something has seriously gone wrong here. So the question that I get is, in walking on the picket line and doing what you're doing, are you hoping to reestablish that top spot as the top of the working class?
Absolutely. I look at it like right now we're just trying to show that we're fighting for something for all of America. You know, I mean, I think everybody's feeling it. It ain't just over here us striking. It's been building up. You see the UPS, Starbucks, unions are growing strong. I think it's like a 62% approval rating, which is up from a long time ago, you know. And right now I just feel like these young folks are getting educated and starting to see that if you don't stand up, they just step on you. Yeah. And the richer they get, the more they want you down. Because, I mean, it's basically kind of almost like they're nowadays are treating us like paid slavery. You know, it's ridiculous.
Now, you told me you've been a member and an auto worker since 1999, almost 25 years now. Over that 25-year period, what have you seen change?
Oh, you know, when I first hired in, it was a career. You know, you had your pension, you had, you know, the best medical benefits, you had, you know, personal time and vacation time to look forward to. You were making a living to where you could take your family on vacation. Probably like a family of three, you could take them on a week-long vacation and enjoy yourself. You had a little bit of expendable money. You know, you could afford the the basics in life, you know. And now, I mean, over the course of the last, I'd say, you know, 17 to 20 years of my career, which is most of it, I had good 5-6 years, you know. It's just declined each and every time, you know, each and every contract. These corporations hire the best of the best when it comes to negotiating. And we have, you know, elected leaders that learn, and sometimes they can find little loopholes and they use them, you know, just like the corporate stock buyback, stuff like that. There's always a loophole.
Let me ask you about that, because, you know, it's one of my pet peeves. You know, when I see a corporation, you know, buying back stocks, that's basically telling me that they have no productive use for the profits that your labor creates. And they just want to put it in their pocket and pump up share prices so the CEO makes more money, the shareholders make money, and yet it never seems to trickle down. Does that anger you?
I mean, it doesn't anger me, but it does frustrate me and disappoint me that they would put out commercials saying how our workers are family and things like that and really say how much they appreciate us. When it comes to paying us like we're quality people, to building quality cars and running America, like they like to say, and like we're family, they just kind of treat us like they don't, you know, like just to help, when we're the ones that are making them the millions off our backs, the skin of our teeth, you know. And I know people that, you know, rely on overtime just to live a normal life, to be able to pay their bills. You shouldn't have to do that. You know, like you said, it was the gold standard. We used to be able to look up to those people, like, wow, they work at the big three. That was something to look forward to. Even after you retired, you had something to look forward to. You had your retiree benefits and medical benefits, and they took that. You know, once they started not caring about the retirees, it showed exactly the companies they are. Like I said, if I was to retire here, I'm about to have 30 years. What makes you think that I was a company that treats me like that? What makes you think that I wouldn't just jump ship and decide to buy something cheaper? Because the way they're paying us, they're making it to where their own employees can only afford Kias, you know? So what do they expect?
No, that's an interesting point, because, you know, Ford, you know, was one of the great talking points is Henry Ford paid $5 a day so that workers could afford to buy his car. And to see, you know, right now you've got the CEO of Ford saying, "Go, well, you know, if we give them what they want, we're going to go bankrupt." What do you make of that argument, that if you get what you want, the companies are going to go belly up?
He's just using scare tactic words. I mean, mathematically, they're not going bankrupt. They just, you know, they're making billions every year. It wouldn't cost but maybe $1 billion for them to give us all these raises. You know, I mean, there's only 56,000 people in Ford, you know, and I mean, there's over 300,000 at UPS. So explain to me, and they make less than Ford. So explain to me how they can give their people that. It's because they appreciate their people. They're treating their people like family. They know their people have a job that hurts their body, you know.
That's an excellent point. And the other point that I would make is, you know, when the company starts losing money, you know, what do the big three always seem to do?
Oh, man, they blame it on us. You know, it's always the worker.
Concessions, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. That, you know, they'll use attendance and things like that and different policies that they have. And that's kind of their little bargaining chip. But the thing is, you know, who wants to work at a job that they're unproud of? Half these people have two jobs. They don't, you know, we don't have anything for like daycare for these single parents or nothing like that. So it's hard for a lot of these people just to get in there just to make a barely livable wage and hurt their body when they have a whole family, you know. And so they're working two jobs. What do you expect? These people are running themselves to death just to make sure Ford makes their profit. And all we're trying to do is just make a living, be normal folks, and be able to go to the grocery store and not feel like we're hurting every time we go to Target, you know.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent point. So walk me through what the main points are. I know that the talk of a 40% raise is something that even Nikki Haley, you know, focused on today on Fox News. How dare they want, you know, 40% raise, without mentioning that the CEOs, that was their raise over the last 4 years. You know, what are the main issues so people hear it right from you?
Well, you know, I mean, it's still that raise and just about everything we lost, COLA, things like that, our pensions, getting rid of these tiers. It's everything we lost in 2007. It's nothing different. If you were to look back, do the math and bring it up to this year, the standard, if we were to get our normal raises and the things we deserve and just kept what Ford said they were going to give us back, that's what we would be. We're just asking for what we were supposed to have back anyway. It's money we should already have. So these guys are just now getting another 40% raise, making the millions of dollars and driving corporate cars and all that. And we're just sitting here looking to just try to, hey, we're just trying to get to where the living standard is again. you know, to where America could be proud of its people and feel like the industrial class is something. It ain't all about technology. We still exist too. You know what I mean? And, you know, if Google's sitting there treating their people like gold, why can't Ford? Instead of treating us like we're just miners and crappy and all like that. And miners aren't crappy either. Just treating everybody like, you know, you got to have these different people are hurting their bodies for these companies. And they really just got to start respecting that. I just don't understand how somebody could, not even, you know, like Mary Barra, you know, the GM exec saying how 93% of her pay was, you know, earned on her merits, you know, out of that, out of $29 million, 97% of it was earned by her merit. Like I challenged her to come work the line for just a few weeks. I don't even give her a year. Yeah. And I guarantee you she'll change her stance in a heartbeat because she probably never had any kind of cut or anything on those pretty little hands of hers. I promise that.
So 93% is based on her merit. How many bolts did she put on a car? How many hoods? How many windshields? How many trunks did she put? How much productivity did she pull out for, you know, 93% of what, $25 million? I gotta know, how many lug nuts did she tighten?
I'm thinking the same thing. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, I mean, you're making the money off the backs of the worker. We're over here just asking for a little bit of the crumb. Let it fall off the cookie for us, man. She's getting her nails done every day. We're actually trying to get her feet and her hands taped up just to make it through the day. And she's making sure she's got the right color just for her next interview to look good for her. You know, she's the puppet.
Yeah.
You know, all that, you know, she's the puppet for the shareholders and, you know, and her execs. And it's terrible that people hire people to just be kind of like, what was that movie? There's a movie. I don't know exactly which one it is, but I do believe it was like Yes Man or Jim Carrey was in it. And they put him as that character where he's, you know, he's like the fall guy. Yeah, I forget which movie it is exactly, but it's just that's what they are. And but they, you know, that's they're that chess piece for the big execs in there that are making the real money that you don't really hear about.
Yeah, 93% of her pay is based on her merit. What's the other 7%? But here's the thing, and this is where, you know, I'm not against the idea of a meritocracy. I believe I grew up believing that if you work hard, you played by the rules, that you should get ahead. These companies are wildly profitable now. You guys are the guys who produce that profit through the sweat of your brow and the ache of your back and the blood, sweat, and tears that you sweat over and pain over to build these vehicles. Shouldn't some of that trickle down to you?
Oh yeah, I feel like it should. I mean, when it did, you could look at how the U.S. economy and how just families and things were. You know, people were moving around, people were buying things. I mean, you can go back to the 70s, 80s when they fought in 76 to get a contract going over at Ford. You know, it was over health and safety and things like that. But anytime that we win and get significant wins, the economy and the whole community do a lot better. It's a win-win situation if they actually would just pay their people. Yeah. You know, they're going to sell their cars to us. It instills more morale. Right now, they're destroying their own morale and their company. So, you know, they're going to have nobody wanting to buy your cars. Just how it is.
So let me ask you a last line of questioning I've got for you, because, you know, one of the other things that I've heard is, you know, clearly it's about the new technology and moving, you know, as the country moves towards electric vehicles and away from, you know, gas powered engines. It's about the next generation of jobs being the kind of jobs that, you know, maybe we used to have in this country for auto workers. You know, how much of that is talked about on the picket line? How much of that is driving you guys being on strike?
Oh, that's another thing. You know, the EV, that's a scary thing because we have transmission plants and different type of engine plants, things like that. They're, you know, they could eliminate those jobs, you know, when it comes to EV. And there's a lot of people just worried about, we want them to be unionized. We want them to make our wage. You know, I mean, to try to hire them in and make them basically a two-tier plant, that is, it's just ridiculous, you know, and then just to try to not give them the same benefits we got, but this is supposed to be the way of the future. So it's their way of the future, making it to where people can barely live. I don't, you know, making them basically the next corporate welfare program like Walmart and McDonald's, where they're training us how to get bridge cards next. You know, that's where I'm feeling like they're going. It just doesn't make sense anymore.
How can we help? I've been saying for a couple of years now, I think every politician, every working person should adopt a striker. Should get out on a picket line, even if you know nothing about them. Walk with someone on strike. Bring a pizza, a bottle of water, throw a buck or two in the strike fund, because your success is the success of all working people. How can we help? How can people get involved?
Oh, very easily. As far as the easiest thing is, if you drive by a strike line anywhere, I don't care if it's Teamsters, if it's the teachers. Right now, we got UAW, Blue Cross Blue Shield out in Detroit. Honk for them. Show them that they're getting noticed. You know, little donations like water or just saying, hey, we're here for you. Stay strong. Showing up and just grabbing a picket sign for even if it's 5 minutes just to show that you care. Just, you know, those little things right there keep us strong and keep us going. The media helps all the time, people coming through and just really giving us positive praise. And then having, we've had a lot of different politicians come in that are, you know, that are showing up, that have elected officials that have came in and really stepped up, our mayors, different community businesses stepping up to the plate, giving food, different toiletries and things like that. It's when the community steps in, it's amazing, you know. And then when the media, like y'all, come in too and actually are looking out for us, it's amazing too, because that's the America that we used to have, when everybody looked out for everybody and everybody was trying to make everybody better. It wasn't about the race to the top, where, you know, it's like not even a 1% chance for most of us. So let's just try to get to where at least it's a race to where we're all happy.
There you go. Charles, I appreciate you taking time for us. I look forward to talking to you again when this is over. Best of luck. One day longer, one day stronger, brother.
All right. Thank you, Rick, man. You're awesome, brother.
Thanks so much, Charles. Charles Wade, UAW Local 900 member. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Because look, adopt a striker is important. The larger the picket line, the more people on that line, the shorter the strike. That's the reality. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
What a good guy. I gotta tell you, I like him. And look, we need more people who are going to step up, stand up, and speak out. And as I've been saying, look, if we want to reunite this country, if we want to bring it back, if you buy the whole, we're going to make America great again, if you buy that, you know how we make this country great? By ensuring that if you work hard and play by the rules, that you do get ahead, that we make these jobs great again. And all jobs that people can have dignity in. And look, you know, it's interesting watching some of the Nikki Haley's of the world and the people who are pandering to the CEO class. Because as I've always said, I truly believe every job has value. I try and treat everyone with the dignity and respect that they earn and deserve, whether they're sweeping a street, which I have done, or they're working at a fast food restaurant, or they're in the doctor's office. It doesn't matter to me what you're doing. Once you show up and you are there to do your job, you should do it to the best of your ability, with pride and dignity, and people should treat you like that. And part of that is being able to make a living. Part of that is the wage that you earn and your ability to keep a roof over your head, food on the table, all of those things. And it's interesting to me, and I was looking at this report by Wallet Hub. You know, they come out with these surveys that they do, and you know, they look at, you know, different, they do different reports. And this most recent one, 2023 states with the highest job resignation rates, you know, the great quit. It's interesting that the states that have the highest quit rates, you know, West Virginia, Mississippi, Kentucky, Oklahoma, Wyoming, Arkansas, Tennessee, Louisiana, you know, those states, at the bottom of the unionization rate. And yet the states with the least quitting, Massachusetts, number one, a highly unionized state, New York, a highly unionized state next, Maine, California, Hawaii, Illinois, Connecticut, Rhode Island, District of Columbia, Pennsylvania, all heavily unionized at the top of the union density charts. There's something there, folks. And I used to work for a company that used to tout the fact that they had a 1% turnover. That when you got a job working for that company, people stayed because you earned a good wage. You had excellent benefits, healthcare, pension, you know, all of that stuff. People stayed. They were dedicated to that job, to that company. Even when it got bought up and absorbed, there were still people who were loyal to that brand because they were treated with respect. And now, you know, in Charles weighed in on this a couple of times. This idea that you're just a negative on a balance sheet. You're just a number. That's that sense I get, you know, in talking with a lot of working people, that they don't matter, that their work doesn't matter. And I come back to the politics of this. This has been pushed down our throat for, you know, Reagan forward. You know, the day August 4th, 1981, the day, you know, Reagan fired the Patco workers. The shot heard across the boardroom, which sent CEOs into a tizzy and into a, you know, all warm and fuzzy, because it meant now we can claw back all that profit. And that's why I think this strike is so important. Why I thought if the Teamsters would have gone on strike against UPS, that would have been a massive sea change. And look, the fact that they didn't go on strike and they got like a 48% raise, that is enormous. And you don't hear our mainstream corporate controlled media, you know, owned by, you know, 90% of everything we see here and read owned by six corporations. You don't hear that. You don't hear how well they did at the bargaining table and how enriched their employees are. No, don't hear that, because that would be bad. Because that might put something in your head. That might make you think, hey, if I organize, if we in our workplace say, hey, we're gonna sit down, open the books, boss. We want to see what our wealth creates and what our labor's worth. If you got that in your head, that would be bad for them. It's so much easier to throw division in there. You know, it's that I remember several years back, and it's probably been 20 years. That you had, you know, corporate America putting in newspapers. Newspapers were these large pieces of paper that they would print things on, because we don't have them anymore. And they would take out full page ads of, you know, this corporation closed, and there'd be a, you know, out of business sign, and it was the unions did this. You know, the union workers demanding too much, close these places. And it's ridiculous, because these corporations, they were moving regardless. Whether these workers were making a good, decent wage, or they were making just above poverty, wherever there was cheaper labor, corporate America was going. And blaming the workers for what corporations do is well, I guess, you know, classic of the Stockholm Syndrome mentality, because we're used to taking the brunt of the abuse. And I hope that with this strike summer, with this solidarity summer, however you want to put this, that maybe we start learning the lesson. And I go back to Nikki Haley, you know, saying, you know, Joe Biden did this. You know, Joe Biden has emboldened these people. Joe Biden, you know, has said, you know, he's the most pro-union president. And I got to tell you, if I'm the Biden folks, I have her saying, when you have the most pro-union president, and he touts that he's emboldened the unions, this is what you get: better wages, better hours, better conditions, a working class that feels heard. That, to me, is the campaign ad of the century. Even Nikki Haley says, when you have a president that constantly says, go union, people's lives get better. I want that. Please, Nikki Haley, keep talking. Please keep saying more. Keep telling us who you are. Keep telling us who the Republican Party is. You know, the party that hates working people. So, Biden, if you're listening, that's your campaign ad. take it. Yes, I'm the most pro-union president because I want people's lives to get better. Yes, I fully own that I'm standing up for working people. And then turn it around. Nikki, who do you stand up for? Who are you supporting? That's right, the Walmart CEOs that you said, hey, if unions come to South Carolina, I'd kick them with my pointy toes, so that we can make sure our workers continue to make poverty wages. Shame on her. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1977. That was the day that is remembered in Youngstown, Ohio, as Black Monday. The Youngstown Sheet and Tube Company announced plans to close its doors, laying off more than 4,000 workers. Youngstown was a steel town. During the first half of the 20th century, plants were booming. Youngstown was also a union town, a stronghold for the United Steelworkers by the 1940s. But by the 1970s, the once booming steel industry was going bust in Youngstown. More and more jobs moved overseas and to states with less union protections. Black Monday began a devastating series of plant closings. 2 years later, Briar Hill Mill closed, followed in 1980 by U.S. Steel. In 1985, it was Republic Steel's turn. By the early 1990s, the steel industry, which had once employed 40,000 people, only had 1,000 workers left in Youngstown. William Lawson, the executive director of the Mahoning Valley Historical Society, recalled the impact of the closings, saying, quote, over the course of my high school career, many boys and girls I had known in grade school left, some in the middle of school years, most during the summers, as their parents accepted transfers to work in other plants around the country or lost their jobs and went out in search of employment elsewhere. In 1997, the Jeanette furnace at the shuttered Briar Hill plant was dynamited, despite preservationists' efforts to save it. Bringing down the Sweet Jenny furnace became symbol of Youngstown's economic ruin, memorialized in this Bruce Springsteen song.
Here in Youngstown.
Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Sweet Jenny, I'm sinking down. Here, darling, in Youngstown.
Oh, thank God for Ted Cruz. Once again, the far right-wing U.S. Senator is saving you and me from a political horror that doesn't exist. This is Ted's specialty, for he seems unable to deal with the real economic and social problems that workaday people actually have. Thus, he constantly tries to divert attention from his senatorial incompetence by staging embarrassing political stunts, such as his furious fulminations against Big Bird, Mickey Mouse, and other fictional characters. Unable to triumph over them, however, Cruz is now conjuring up entirely fictional conflicts to let him, a Harvard-educated elitist, pose as a hero of working-class commoners. Beer drinkers, for example. The Cruiser recently swooped onto a Republican TV show squawking like Chicken Little that Joe Biden intended to restrict us Americans to only 2 beers a week. Oh, the horror! What is it with liberals that want to control every damn aspect of your life, squealed the senator, who, by the way, does want government to control every woman's reproductive rights, people's voting rights, the rights of labor, what books people can read, etc., etc. But Ted's in a tizzy over Biden's 2-beer limit. Only, there's no such thing. Actually, Biden has said nothing about beer. Zero, zilch. Joe's kind of busy. You know, Ukraine, global warming, health care, real problems. So, unlike the little senator from Texas, he doesn't have time to play political pickleball. This is Jim Hightower saying, embarrassingly, such other GOP officials as Iowa Senator Joni Ernst have joined Cruz's screwball crusade to stop Biden's non-existent beer bust. It's like they all went to clown school to learn to be senatorial. As for Ted, his nonstop series of nutty PR antics reveals that he is to a real senator what near beer is to beer, only not nearly as close.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as a 30-plus year member of the Teamsters Union, I'm always looking for ways to promote working people, always looking as a way to ensure that where I spend my money gets spent in places that help working people. So, when I buy a car, I use the UAW's buying guide. When I'm traveling, Unite Here does a great job with Union Hotels to help travelers, pick that quality hotel. And now I see the folks over at the Culinary Union in Las Vegas. They have kicked off Union Eats, a guide to bars and restaurants where people who are serving you beverages and meals actually earn a decent living wage in respectable working conditions. I got to tell you, great stuff. And I'm thrilled to see this happen. Would love to see it all across the country. Would love to see more unionized restaurants. But that's why I've asked Ted Papa George to come talk with us. Ted is the Secretary Treasurer of the Culinary Union. They have kicked off this Union Eats program. The website, unioneats.org. Ted, thanks for taking time for us.
All right. Thanks for having me on, Rick. Appreciate it.
So walk me through this. What is this program? Why'd you do it? And what's it doing?
Well, look, we're the Culinary Workers Union in Las Vegas, but we're part of Unite Here, which is hotel, gaming, food service. But one of the things we're really proud of in Las Vegas, we fought very hard. We've been here for 85 years, and we built a standard in Las Vegas, a union standard that we've had a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, a lot of strikes. We've done a lot of work to keep that standard. And part of our standard is that we are the Culinary Union. And so we've got hotels, we've got stadiums and restaurants inside the hotels and some outside. And these are union jobs where cooks, servers, bussers, kitchen workers that clean the kitchens have the ability to make a union wage. They have the ability to, they have health care where they got free family coverage and a pension, which more and more, and especially in our world of hotels and restaurants, if they're not union, they're considered poor people's jobs. And so we've been able to build that standard. Now, we've got a real challenge because there's a whole uprising over the last few years of corporate-owned restaurants on the Strip in Las Vegas that are not union. And so for us, it's been important to make sure that, one, we make it very clear for folks like yourself and other travelers out there that when you come to Vegas, from the most expensive restaurants to the great casual dining restaurants and everything in between, celebrity chefs, etc., that there are union restaurants and choices you can go to get great food. But also, we made a decision that we're going to organize these non-union corporate restaurants that are springing up on the Strip. And it's an organizing drive that we're moving forward with, and it's very, very exciting. So those two are really working together.
No, when I saw this, I'm going, the restaurant industry has been one of low wages, of sexual harassment, of abuse, of you name the negative, it's been front and center. And to see working people unionizing and saying, look, we're going to make a respectable wage, because on average, I understand in your backyard, a unionized restaurant worker makes like $24 an hour, which is not a bad wage, has free health care, has some bit of guaranteed pension, has some decent working conditions. I want to support that. And I think the average everyday working people want to make sure that they support that as well.
Yeah, look, I appreciate that, Rick. But the reality is that the world with private equity, hedge funds, Wall Street just buying up everything in sight. These casinos that have been our lifeblood, I was born and raised here in Las Vegas. My parents worked in the hotels. I worked in the hotels. I've been a 41-year union member. And we made sure that these jobs are how we raised our families and bought homes and built our community. And so we've been able to fight and make sure that these restaurant jobs are good jobs. Now, this whole idea of Wall Street and private equity, big money coming in, these hotels get bought and sold all the time. So it's about wages, it's about healthcare, it's about pension, it's about respect, but it's also about job security. Because when these big hotels get sold, if it wasn't union, and some of them have done this in the past, when they're not, you're out. You know, you got to reapply for your job. You lose your seniority. But with a union contract, you're guaranteed ownership, successorship that guarantees you stay and your contract stays. And same thing with the restaurants that we have organized inside the union properties and outside. So it changes people's lives in this industry and really makes a difference to know that you've got a union contract and a union job. And to be clear, these companies, these casinos in Las Vegas, they're doing extremely well since the pandemic. They are doing very well. And these non-union corporate casinos that are springing up on the strip are charging the same prices as the union restaurants. And it's just a matter of a big cash grab by private equity. And so we're going to take that on. And we're really proud of this organizing game plan and the work that we're doing here in Las Vegas.
No, it's, I say all the time, you know, every working person needs a contract. Every CEO's got one. Every working person needs one. You talked about, you know, there a second ago, when someone else takes over, they can fire people. Is Nevada that an at-will state like Pennsylvania, which if you don't have a union contract, you can be fired for no reason whatsoever or any reason? Is it an at-will state?
Absolutely. And Nevada is an at-will state. And it's also a right to work state. We call that the right to scab state. But those two things together have been designed to try to stamp out workers' rights and the ability for workers to stick together and take care of their families. That's the goal of that type of legislation. And in spite of that, we've been, as I said, for it's actually 88 years, our union's been in Las Vegas and in Nevada, fighting and building a record of the ability to have good union contracts and good jobs.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show with Ted Papa George. He's the Secretary Treasurer for the Culinary Union. You can check out their website, culinaryunion226.org. We'll get links out on social media, how you can take a look at that. Also, unioneats.org. If you're in Las Vegas, you want to eat at a good quality union restaurant, unioneats.org is where you go. Now, I got to get your thoughts on, I guess, September 26th, you guys are going to be having a strike, the Culinary Union and the Bartenders Union. Some 53,000 hospitality workers potentially going on strike. What's brought us to this?
Well, look, the pandemic, and this is nothing new. I'm sure it happened in Pennsylvania. It happened all over the country, all over the world, really. These big corporations have used the pandemic to really put the squeeze on workers. They were able to reduce the amount of workers, less workers doing more work, profits through the roof. And for example, for us, a big issue is our room cleaners and this idea of cleaning rooms regularly. You travel, Rick. I know you go places where they tell you, nope, you're going to pay the same rate, even more than you paid before the pandemic, but we're not cleaning your room. And that's just a massive cash grab by these big corporations. And we're going to have a big fight about that. Our contracts expired this year on the strip and downtown. We have been negotiating for 5 months since April. No movement by these massive companies who are, you know, room rates are 30% over the pandemic, profits through the roof. They're doing extremely well. And our members have said, you know, we've had enough. We're fine that they make money. We want them to make money, but they're going to have to share the wealth. So we've got a strike authorization vote on the 26th of September in about a week. And that's going to be where we've rented out a big arena, 18,000 seat basketball arena, Thomas and Mack Arena, where the UNLV Rebels play. But we're going to fill it up with workers, cooks, food servers, guest room attendants that clean the rooms. And we're going to send a big message to this industry that, you know, you're not doing any of this without us. And, you know, we got a lot of big events coming up, but this is not the strike. This is a strike authorization vote that says our members say we're going to tell the leadership of the union, myself, I'm the chief negotiator, that we can call a strike at any time if necessary. So after 26, could be a strike at any time. But the reality is we're going to go back to the bargaining table. We'd like to get a deal, but it's just got to be fair. They've got to share the wealth, and they got to deal with some of these workload issues that they have been leftovers from the pandemic.
Yeah, so it comes back excited. To wages, hours, conditions. And it sounds like, again, they're taking advantage of the pandemic for their profit, and it's not trickling down to your members.
Well, what they've done is they've loaded up work, haven't brought all the workers back. So less workers doing more work, and our folks are fed up. We've been patient. We've been respectful of these big gaming companies, but you know, that's going to end. So this strike vote, authorization vote, we're going to fill up the place. It's going to be extremely exciting. And we're going to send a big message to this industry and really to the whole country and all over the world that, look, the entertainment capital world is, you know, is built by workers.
No, you know, this is important. You know, these things are important. The messaging coming out of it is important, not just for you in Las Vegas, but for all across the country to say that workers can, when they come together, have power to make their lives better. I mean, I look at what the Teamsters were able to do at UPS, a historic contract with really solid wage gains. I'm looking at what the UAW folks are doing, saying, hey, we want to return those jobs to the gold standard of the past, or at least a solid middle-class jobs. And I look at what you guys are doing, saying, look, all work has dignity. One job should be enough to support a family and lead an existence in this country. I'm thrilled to see that finally we're not taking what we've been giving and saying we demand better.
But your union, they've done what our union has been doing all over the country and what we're going to do in Las Vegas. You got to be willing to stand up and fight. There's a moment happening right now, Rick, where people have just had enough. Young people can't make it. They can't own homes. They can't pay their rent. The middle-class jobs, these companies are trying to take it away. And what we found that if you are willing to get together and stand up and authorize a strike through a strike vote and be willing to go on strike, you'll have an opportunity like UPS Teamsters did. The UAW guys are going to do it. The riders are going to do it too. They're fighting, and we're going to do the same thing. We're going to get the best contract we've ever gotten. These companies are raking in the dough, and they're going to have to share. And if you stick together and you stand up and fight, you can win. And that's the message we're out to send.
There you go. Well, I wish you the best on this, and I hope you'll come back and talk to us if a strike happens. But I want to go back to the Union Eats thing. How do we get this to go nationwide so I can find Union hotels wherever I travel?
Well, Bethany, I don't know if you're on, but look, our international union that we belong to is Unite Here. We're part of Unite Here. And we do have a Unite Here website that has travel for hotels. But the Culinary Workers Union, as part of Unite Here, look, we've done a big program of organizing restaurants. And I just want to tell you that that we're not unique, but we've had a lot of success. So definitely we have the ability to do it in Las Vegas, and we'll keep you in the loop about how we're doing around the country, Rick, because we'd like to be helpful on that.
It's amazing stuff, and I hope folks, if they're in Vegas, unioneats.org, support workers making a decent wage, but more importantly, support employers who treat their workers decently. And then on the flip side, those who don't, hold them accountable. But Ted, I appreciate your time. I wish you the best. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again real soon.
Thank you so much, Rick. Appreciate you having me on.
Thanks so much, Ted Papa George, Secretary Treasurer of the Culinary Union. Culinaryunion226.org, the website. Gonna take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. Think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1981. More than 400,000 union members marched in Labor Day's first Solidarity Day demonstration in Washington, D.C. The demonstration was called by the AFL-CIO to protest the Reagan administration's policies and the firing of striking air traffic controllers. At the beginning of August, nearly 13,000 air traffic controllers had walked out after talks with the Federal Aviation Administration collapsed. At least 7,000 flights were canceled on that day. The Professional Air Traffic Controllers Organization wanted an annual wage increase and a reduction in work hours. The FAA counteroffer fell far short of what the union wanted. Reagan declared the strike was illegal and eventually fired every striking PATCO worker. President Reagan even went as far as to impose lifetime bans on rehiring any of these workers. The union was decertified in October of 1981. PATCO was just the beginning. Reagan's policies were definitely anti-union. He put union foes in control of the very agencies that were designed to protect and further the rights and interests of workers. He named Donald Dotson the chairman of the National Labor Relations Board. The NLRB oversees union representation elections and labor management bargaining. Dotson let his opinions on unions known when he said that unionized labor relations have been the major contributors to the decline and failure of once healthy industries and have caused destruction of individual freedom. Under Dotson, the board abandoned its purpose to promote collective bargaining. The NLRB settled only about half as many complaints of employers' illegal actions as the board during the Carter administration. Those that were settled upheld employers in 3/4 of the cases. The Reagan-era anti-union policies and attacks on workers have had serious repercussions that workers are still suffering from to this day. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, ricksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. You know, I look at Susan Collins. Now, what's interesting, I said earlier that I'm in favor of a dress code, you know, for the Senate. I think you have to have some kind of business attire. I don't think you show up in a hoodie and shorts. And look, I love John Fetterman. We've been friendly for years. But, you know, it's just not. And here's the thing, because you know someone's going to take it to the extreme where Susan Collins has said that she's going to wear a bikini. No one wants to see Susan Collins in a bikini. I don't even think Susan Collins wants to see Susan Collins in a bikini. But you would get, you know, think about some of the outfits that then could come out of this. And look, it's a distraction. I think the reality is you show up, you look respectable. But as I said earlier, do you think the kids who are now going to go hungry care if Joe Manchin was in a $1,000 Brooks Brothers suit? No. All they know is they're now hungry. So again, this was a distraction. This is the, hey, look over here. This is the shiny thing to distract from the fact that they're not doing their job. And look, we're close to a shutdown. Our government is broken, badly broken. We are very close to a shutdown. And, you know, it's one of those things that you go, how did we get so badly broken? And it's because of all these distractions. It's because of all these shinies thing. It's because of, hey, you know, red hat, blue hat. If my team's against it, I got to be against it. And look, you know, I'm a labor guy. And this is why I think it was so important for Sean Fain to say what he did. We're taking on the billionaire class. We're taking on the wealthy interests. We're fighting for the little guy. Why that is the right frame. And as I've said for years, it's always been up, down. It's always been the people sitting in our ivory towers against the rest of us. It's just, they've been smart enough to figure out how to divide and conquer us. They're united. They want tax cuts. They want deregulation. They want what they get. Because the reality is, if we ever figured out as working people that we have some ability to affect change, to have better jobs, to have better wages, to get healthcare, education, you name it. If we ever figured out that if we would come back together and unite under the banner of I don't care about red hat, blue hat. I care about my neighborhood. I care about my kids' future. I care about my job. The moneyed interest would, well, they'd be in trouble. Because look, yeah, they've got all the money, but we've out-procreated them. And so what they do is they create an environment where we are constantly bickering, constantly fighting, constantly tearing into each other, constantly, I got to win. I'm going to one-up you. We got social media now where it's all about trolls and idiots. You got ratioed. And I look at this new Pew report out. Find 65% of us say they always or often feel exhausted when talking about politics. 55% feel angry. Now remember, my view is politics decides who gets what. If 55% of us are angry talking about politics, we're not talking about making lives better. We're talking about how to make others more miserable. That is frightening. Just 10% say they always or often feel hopeful. 4% excited. I would put myself in that 4% because I still believe we can. I still believe. I know, Rick, are you stupid? But I still believe that we can change things. I still believe that if we put down the red hat, blue hat stuff and talk about the green stuff, we can do better. But we're not allowed. We've got a corporate-controlled media who's been force-feeding us outrage candy for decades. It's what we're accustomed to. It's what we want. It's what we need. It's what we crave. We want to focus on Lauren Boebert and her nonsense. And again, Boebert's a disaster. And I love the latest story, the drama that is Trailer Trash Barbie. Evidently, she dumped the boyfriend. I guess it was his fault. Ultimately, all future dates have been canceled, she said. And I learned to check party affiliation before you go on a date. Somehow, that guy being a Democrat, owning a bar that has drag shows, somehow that made her act the fool in the restaurant, in the movie theater, or in the play, being obnoxiously loud, groping, and PDAs and all that. Somehow that was the reason. He was a Democrat. So I look at this and I go, you know what? She's not making lives better. Well, maybe his for a moment. But there are no policies there. And we're careening towards a government shutdown. And that is bad for all of us. Now, what's interesting is I think even people like Mitch McConnell, they completely understand it's bad for them too. McConnell came out and said, this stuff never works out well for Republicans. It's not a good thing. He said, quote, I think you all know I'm not a fan of the government shutdowns. I've seen a few of them over the years. They never have produced a policy change, and they never have. And they've always been a loser for Republicans politically. Yeah, because it turns out people like their trash being picked up. Turns out people like, the national parks being open. Turns out people like getting their Social Security checks on time. Turns out people like the VA, when people show up. It turns out that, people don't hate government as much as we're told we're supposed to. And when it shuts down and people realize just how much government does that affects their lives, then they get kind of angry at the people who shut it down. And which is why I point to Lindsey Graham, who said it's a S show in the House. It's always an S show in the House. Eventually, what's going to happen is a government shutdown will not go well for us. They know, but they can't help themselves. The GOP House cannot help themselves because it's all about the show. It's all about, hey, look at me. It's all about, hey, where am I going to get my next gig? And I look at Ken Buck. Ken Buck, evidently Ken Buck is talking about not going back to running for re-election. He wants a new job. He has thrown it out there. Hey, CNN, I'd like to be an on-air commentator. Also expressed interest, and I love this frame, in a position at the right-leaning Fox News or Newsmax. It's right-leaning. It is right on its... Never mind. If you missed any of today's program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. Also, something I said got under your skin, on your nerves, tell me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Thanks so much for being here.
You're listening to WLAK 1260 AM Amory and WBZH 910 AM W245 CT Hayward. Always streaming on the ABC. Civic Media.